This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we got the thumbs up here, ready live here on Instagram Live. And of course, Pet Life Radio, here for you, here for your pets. So any questions you have, now is the best time to ask. It's free advice. I mean, it can't be free, right? And anyway, just want to talk to you about anything you really want to talk about. Hope you've all had a good week. And it's a gorgeous weekend. I'm sure most of you like three-day weekends. And you like those Monday holidays. I used to like them too, but I don't like them so much anymore. Why? Because I see a certain amount of people a day, and that many people, it's 35 to 40 cases a day, and then multiply that. So what happens is on a holiday weekend, when I'm off on Monday, those cases don't stop. Now they're just squeezed in to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So as crazy as I already am, I'm going to be even crazier. And anyone who's been sitting in my office, and I apologize in advance, it sometimes can be a long wait. But unfortunately, I just can't say no. I mean, I hear so many stories that people call their own vets and they say, look, I need to come in. My dog's been vomiting for 3 days, whatever. Oh, let's see. Well, we can see you next Tuesday, another week. No, I can't do another week. I even don't want to do another day. And they start calling around and my girls up front know, and that I'm not going to say no. So come in. I always say, bring a book, bring your laptop, something to keep you busy for an hour or so, but we will get you in. As they say, Dr. Rupert's not going to leave until he sees you. So I don't know. I'm definitely a dinosaur. There's no doubt about it. I don't mind being a dinosaur. I kind of like it, actually. So anyway, let's hear some questions. In the meantime, I have to, you know, tell you of a case. I'm going to post pictures. I hope if you guys follow me and you follow my pictures, I hope it's not going to gross you out. It may. So we've had this cat come in a number of times, not old, like ancient, but I think 9 years old. And she has something called megacolon. And that is that she's lost complete tone in her colon, which means she can't push out the stool that's accumulating. And I'm going to show before and after pictures, radiographs. But I'll tell you, her colon was a racehorse would be jealous. We're talking, it was almost as big as the cat in the abdomen. It was huge. And this poor cat was in such distress. So we had to do this before, and we had to basically anesthetize and literally clean out the colon. And I know it's gross. People are saying, Robert, what are you doing? I took a picture of what we pulled out of this cat's colon. And I'm not talking a day or two or three. I'm talking a week or two of stool just build up and backed up to the point where this poor cat wouldn't want to eat. And when it did eat, it vomited because there was no place for it to go. The stomach couldn't even empty. It's horrendous. The sad part about a case like this is all of the tricks that we have medically to try to, well, two things. Number one, soften the stool so it doesn't firm up like that. And secondly, to see if we can increase mobility through the intestinal tract and what we call intestinal motility, get the muscles working. And unfortunately, when it comes to megacolon like this, there's really not a whole lot you can do other than a pretty traumatic surgery, one that I don't do. I'm going to refer to a surgeon, and that is called a partial colectomy, where they actually have to, almost like a person with Crohn's. And you know, I'm sure you've heard that before. That what they have to do is they have to cut off that affected piece of colon, in which case it's going to be the entire descending colon, possibly some of the transverse colon, and maybe even some of the ascending colon up to what's called the cecum. And the cecum is the very first part of the small intestine, the large intestine, large bowel. And that's why they call it ileocecal-colic junction. And it is just, it's really sad, this poor cat. And when it comes to things like this also, there's no real like guarantee that it's going to help. So it's really, it's such a sad case, but I will keep it posted. I will, as I said, get you to take a look at the pictures. If it grosses you out, I apologize. Sorry, but it, you know, from me, my perspective, this stuff doesn't gross me out anymore. And you know, I'm the kind of guy that I always joke, you know, the 3 second rule, something falls on the floor, you got 3 seconds. Now I'm about a 3 week rule. You know, if it's there, I can brush it off, wash it, run it under some water, I'm good. And I think that's why my immune system is so good, because I'm subjecting myself all the time to very small doses of whatever the bad thing is. And my it's almost like a vaccine. A vaccine is very small doses of a disease. Now, sometimes it's what's called attenuated. So it is no longer infective in that same species. If you look what's called a nosode, nosodes are also like micro parts of whatever the infection, the bacteria, the virus is. And it's the goal is to build up the animal's own immune system. And it's, you know, it's pretty, I mean, for many, it's very effective. So anyway, so what, let's see any interesting cases I have here. There's got to be some. Hello, Barbara. Okay. Good morning. So let me share some other stuff with you while you're thinking of any questions you may have, because I get, you know, a lot of these. Speaking of fostering, I was going to tell a story about a cat that came in and a kitten. And again, one of those kittens, actually, this kitten found the possible prospective owner. She's already told me that she, when she brought the kitten in, it was literally a kitty, less than 4 weeks old, because it weighed, usually it's a pound a month. So usually a 4 pound cat would be a month old, right? So 4 months, it's a pound a month. So that means a 4 pound cat would be 4 months old. This is less. This was like 3.5 or 3.4 pounds. So anyway, 12, 13 weeks old. And it was adorable. It was snotty nose. And it came to her door and started scratching at the door. How, why, who knows? So anyway, obviously she took the cat in. She put a bowl of food down. This cat wolfed the food down like crazy, clearly already weaned. Now, her first thought was she's afraid to keep the cat because what about mom? Is she taken? I said, no. At this age, even if she was with mom, she's weaned. I mean, she's weaned for a while. So anyway, she takes the cat in. She already has a couple of cats, a couple of dogs. And she was, God, look, this kitty is so cute. You should keep it. She's, no, I can't. I'm gonna, but I'll foster it. I have a friend who may want it. And she goes down. If not, then that same day, a cat rescue group comes in. They said they'd be willing to foster the cat. I got an email or a text this morning from the client. She starts asking me about, because the cat's respiratory infection, how long does she need to keep it away from her other cats? Because I think I may want to keep. I knew it. Yeah, it's funny. This kitty was so adorable. I mean, literally, I picked it up. I mean, I'm a total stranger, and this is a little kitten. Usually, little kittens like this are very nervous, very anxious, and she literally was purring like a motor. It's crazy. So as I'm reading this, I'm smiling. You know what this reminds me of how many times I've heard this following statement. So a family comes in to say goodbye to their animal, putting a pet to sleep, and I know it's tough, and I always say, even when you know it's the right thing, even though it's terminal, you don't want the pet to suffer, it's still very, very difficult to do. And I get it. You know, I've been there, done that. I've had, obviously, more than my share of animals over the years. Hi, JB. And Nick, Todd, how you doing? Anyway, I said, it's just one of those things that it's hard. It's going to be hard. But so many people, it is so hard. And I've heard this dozens upon dozens upon dozens of times. This is it. I can't go through this again. I'm not going to get a pet. And I'm thinking, I'm laughing inside now, because how many times have I heard that? And whether it's a week, a month, a year, 2 years, guess who's coming back in with another pet? And I always say this, when you have that heart, when you have that relationship you've had with a pet, you know, you value it and you know how amazing it is. And nowadays, especially with the number of animals being euthanized, I mean, there was a shelter down in the Southern LA area or in Southern California. That is, they say there is limit is 10 days. If an animal is not adapted in 10 days, regardless of how adoptable it is, how healthy, how young, whatever the case may be, they are going to put it to sleep. I mean, that's terrible. So here I am thinking that I laugh now in my mind because I know whatever time it's going to be, they're coming back. And one of the things I try to tell them now is the only person that loses from not getting another pet are those that are not getting another pet. Why? Because the deceased pet, obviously, they're gone. You know, I hear someone, well, I feel so badly because I was jealous. What are you jealous? They're not going to know. Don't be silly. And you know the value, and you're depriving yourself of that amazing relationship. It can't last. So the best way, and I always say, the best way to memorialize a past pet is through your future pets, which is why these people that are doing the genetic stuff and cloning, that is so silly. And I'll explain that why in a minute. But because inevitably that new pet, it's going to be a behavior. It's going to be an expression. It's going to be a vocalization. It's going to be something in their day-to-day life that's going to remind you of the past pet. And that's, you always say, I do it all the time. My first lab, my own very own lab was Thor. My current lab will do something. Oh my God, remember Thor used to do that. It's a great way to always memorialize your past pet is through your future pets. So don't torture yourselves by not getting another animal. I mean, for me, it's 10 minutes. I mean, I'm already looking. I still haven't found a replacement cat. You know, we had five cats. Now we're down to four, and I'm waiting for that. But usually I find that the cats really, or the pets in general, they find us, just like this little kitty with my client. And now she's thinking after just it wasn't even a full weekend. It was 2 days since I saw her. Now she's going, you know, I don't know. I think they want to keep it. Of course you want to keep it. How could you not? It's cat's adorable. So anyway, hold on a second. We have some questions, which I love. All right. Do dogs eat rats? I moved to a new location 1.5 years ago. There's a lot of bushes around, and I've seen various animals ever since in my life. So, I mean, do they do it as a normal meal? No. Do they eat it? Maybe. They will kill it for sure. I mean, some dogs, I mean, my Frenchie, if you put any rodent in the same yard as my Frenchie, I'm going to have a dead rodent. There's no doubt about it. And he is quick, and he is not that bright. I will tell you, when a dog gets skunked twice, you think he'd learn? No, he doesn't. He still goes after every skunk he sees. And now I'm more careful because I have to deal with that smell. And man, that smell lingers. It is a mind blow. All the tricks you learn, to heck with those tricks. Nothing seems to work. To this day, even an old towel that's been washed dozens of times since that we used to, you know, after I bathed him, I dried him. And that towel still has the skunk smell. It's crazy. New York Yankee, how you doing? Okay, another from Roy the Rescue. Frenchie, a few days ago after 1.5 years, I stayed a rat in the house while I was still thinking about how to get it out. Or later, I saw it fur enters the door. It was like it was skin, no single meat. Ah, so yes, I definitely may. Now, here is my concern when it comes to like rats and mice. And we've talked about this before, but if you weren't here, we'll talk about it again. A lot of these animals are already affected by a rat bait, which is an anticoagulant or something that really blows out the liver. When a dog or a cat eats an animal that was dying or maybe even already dead, because of that, they can get it into their system as well. And again, a case I talked about, a friend of mine had a beautiful case hound, and she came in for a spay. And during the spay, even after, she was continued to bleed. And, you know, we ligate the vessels, of course. But little bleeders, they clot up on their own, no problem. And sometimes they're so small, you can't even find them. You don't worry about those. You worry about the big bleeders. Anyway, this dog continued to bleed, so much so that I was worried, maybe, I don't know, did I have a slipped ligature? Did something happen? Doesn't never happen, but it can. You never say never. You never say always. You've got to be careful. So I opened the dog again. I checked the main three ligatures, which is the left ovary, the right ovary, and the body of the uterus. Everything was fine. So I called the owner. And I say, God, it's the weirdest thing, but she continues to bleed. You know what? It's almost as if she was given like rat poison or something. He goes, what? Rat poison. It's an anticoagulant. He goes, oh, you know, Jeff, I didn't think to tell you this, but this week we found her with a rat in her mouth, a dead rat. And I'm going, oh my God, I'll bet you that that's exactly what happened. Started treating the dog with vitamin K, and vitamin K is one of the antidotes to the poisons that are the anticoagulants. And sure enough, this dog obviously did very well, and it was case over. But it just goes to show you that if an animal is killed by a toxin of some sort, and then your dog or cat attacks that animal, absolutely, it can, not will, but it can affect your pet as well. So you got to be careful. With that, we're going to go to break. It is 9:18. Send it back to Mark for the commercial break here on Pet Life Radio. And I will mute myself from Pet Life Radio during the commercials so we can still talk here on Instagram. But everybody, don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So we're back here live on Pet Life Radio. We're just talking about one of my friends, clients, a visitor here on our Instagram, is adopting a new Aussie pup that had some congenital defects. And I think it's definitely a go also. The collarbone, I'm not worried about. Cleft palate should be seen if it is big enough to create a problem. I don't know if there's usually dogs with cleft palates. That means there's a cleft, an opening that we're now a communication between the mouth, the hard palate up on top, and the nasal passage. So these dogs are always getting nasal infections and drainage because of stuff that's going on in the mouth, et cetera. And sometimes it actually affects their nutrition. Little puppies with big cleft palates, they can't, when they suck, right, from mom, they can't close it because you got the nose. It's like trying to go like that where there's a hole. They can't really get that sucking action. Therefore, many of them, if not most, don't survive. If it's a small one and they can still get that sealant and be able to build up that suction, then they can nurse, they can eat, and they do okay. So I'm thinking the fact that this one's as old as it is, that's okay. So seeing only fur, couldn't realize it means my dog or both of them ate it. Yes, they could have eaten it. And I don't know when this was, if it was just a dead or a dying or a rat that they killed, but otherwise the rat was okay, then obviously poor rat, but, or maybe not. But if they're doing okay now, and the way you can tell, how can you tell if your dog got a hold of something that is a anticoagulant, maybe from eating a deceased rat? So first of all, there's something called bruising, ecchymosis, almost like a black and blue mark. You look around them and see, do you see these big like bruises? Another thing is called petechiation. Petechiation are little like blood polka dots. And you can see them in the, if you lift up the gums and you look at the gums and you see a lot of red polka dots all over the place. That's called petechia. So it could be petechiation. You can look also in the sclera, the eye, the white part of the eye. You might see an ejected sclera that's indicating of some bleeding. Of course, if it's really bad, the gums will be pale. And then you're worried about, needing a blood transfusion, getting started on vitamin K. But so if it's been a while, over several days, and everything is still perfect, chances are you don't have to worry about it. All right. Hello, Shell Jesse. No, hello, New York Yankee. I asked my veterinarian about trying again to brush one of my 16-and-a-half-year-old Jack Russell Terrier. To brush the teeth? We missed a word there, New York Yankee. It says brush the blank of my 16-and-a-half-year-old Jack Russell Terrier. You know, if you're talking about full dentistry, would I worry about a 16-and-a-half? Of course, I worry about any older pet. But to me, it's not the age alone that's going to make the difference. It's going to depend on the nature of what's going on inside the mouth. It's going to depend on the pet's blood work and the x-rays. If the physical is normal, and I've said many times about my 15-year-old Labrador that I took to surgery, the anesthesia, of course we make adjustments based on an animal's age and condition, but I'm not going to a yes or no based on just the fact that he's 16 and a half. Now, if the teeth are horrendous, I'm actually more worried about not doing them than doing them. Why? Because we know that bacteria in the mouth, especially in an older, more infirm dog, those bacteria hit the bloodstream and they colonize in the heart valves and in the kidney. Now, I am dealing with a case right now of a 10 or 11-year-old dog who is literally in kidney failure. And just to put into perspective what that means, there are three major kidney enzymes we look at. One is called the BUN. Now, BUN, blood, urea, nitrogen, is affected by other factors like hydration, like how much protein in the most recent meal. So you have to look at that one kind of with a grain of salt. The high normal is 31. 31. This dog was 334. That's like incompatible with life. Creatinine, now that's the main kidney enzyme that we look at, has a high normal of 1.6. And this dog was 9.4. If it gets over 5, I'm already very, very, very worried. And this was not, and then of course, phosphorus was like the high normal is like 18. And this dog was 20 something or other, 30 something, 32, I think it was. I mean, it's terrible. But the mouth was, so now I'm looking, was what came first? Was it the mouth causing the kidney disease or the severe kidney disease causing the fact this dog doesn't want to eat and the breath is terrible? It's called uremic breath. That's definitely kidneys. Again, we can't ask the dog, but unfortunately, by the time we got the dog in, it was way too late to even determine. Had I seen this dog maybe 6-8 months ago, of course we would have done a blood test then. I'm sure there would have been some disease, maybe not this bad, But at least we would have done the teeth then and prevented some progression of this disease. But anyway, very, very sad. My husband about trying again to brush the, yeah. So let me see. Nikki, pet sutures. Got CET. Do you recommend another one better? No, CET is great. Look, any, we call it a dentifrice, toothpaste, that is for a dog or a cat. That means they are non-sudsing, so they don't flame out the mouth. They are swallowable, so they can ingest them. And you want to make sure that they kind of like it, so get a flavored one. They're all flavored. I think you can get chicken, you can get beef, you can get shrimp for cats. So I recommend brushing teeth. Honestly, and this is part, any pet parent doesn't want to hear, but I'm thinking you want to get it like, oh God, at least every other day. To do it once a week, I mean, is it better than nothing? Absolutely. But when you think of, you need to remove the plaque. The plaque is the film left behind through eating. That needs to go. When that goes, then there's less there for the bacteria and the saliva in the mouth to work on to harden it to become calculus or tartar. Once it does, there's no way brushing is going to get it off. That's where you need professional dental scraping. And to do it thoroughly and to get under the gums, sadly, you need anesthesia. And there was a study about that we've talked about. You think you're doing a great job because the teeth look good after these anesthesia-free places, but they're really not as effective and they don't get down to the root of the goat, the gums and the roots of the teeth. And that's why we get all these loose teeth with severe dental disease later on down the road. Now, if you want it to alternate, maybe you do it every 6 months, once 6 months you do the anesthesia-free, at least that'll take care of a lot of the plaque, which is good, but the tartar that's already there, they scrape it away. And so it doesn't give it a chance to continue to migrate and push more under the gums, but at least once a year, you should have a thorough dental cleaning with anesthesia. All right, let's see what we got here. All right, more from Roy the Rescue Frenchie. As of now, none of the showing any signs. Yeah, I would say at this point, you're probably okay. I don't think if you would have seen it by now. All right. And let's see. Did we join? Picture doesn't show the cleft. Oh, yeah, no, it doesn't show the cleft. So I want to, what you could do is when you get the pup, all you have to do is play with it and maybe upside down. And then so you want to get the picture of the hard palate. It's hard to get, but if the dog's upside down, now it's a lot easier to shoot downward and get it. Hello there, Frankie74. Eloise. She told me it was small. As we discussed, Todd, I would think it's small because the dog wouldn't get this far along in development if it was a large cleft. They would have a tough time eating. There'd be persistent nasal infections. It would be, you'd know there's a problem. So the fact that this dog is doing pretty well, I believe. Question, what does the senior blood panel show us? Hang on a second. So I want to say hi to Hardwick. Color, Eloise. It's true that if a dog has urine infection as a puppy, we'll have them all the time. Okay, two things. Good questions by Eloise. Eloise, by the way, amazing dog trainer. And so she always and does has a big rescue. So she's seeing all these problems. And, basically what's great about someone like this is that because they rescue out many dogs, they interact with many different veterinarians. And so, I get these questions because I don't think she's challenging other decisions from other veterinarians, but wants maybe a better explanation. So senior blood panel basically shows us pretty much everything. It is obviously the CBC, complete blood count, including platelets. It's going to show us all the chemistries and a lot of the electrolytes. So it's a good picture of thyroid, which is important. And for cats, I actually run basically a senior plus to give me not only T4, but also T4 by ED, which is thyroid by equilibrium dialysis. And what that does is that will give us a better idea of what's going on with the thyroid gland. See, the thyroid hormone itself, that is affected by many things. And we see often something called sick thyroid syndrome, STS, sick thyroid syndrome. If a dog or cat has something else going on in its body, the thyroid responds usually by the value going down. If you use only your T4 as a diagnostic to determine whether or not a pet is hypothyroid, then I am highly against that because we see tons of sick thyroid syndrome. Now, if you see that and you're concerned before you start having your pet supplemented with thyroid hormone, which I'm against, do a T4 by ED. equilibrium analysis, I'd say the vast majority of normal, healthy dogs that happen on a basic panel to show low T4. If you do a T4 by ED, you'll find it's normal. And that supports sick thyroid syndrome. Now, if you do an ED and that also is low, then chances are you have a hypothyroid state and need supplementation. But I will tell you that most of those dogs that you find T4 is also, they have certain clinical signs of being hypothyroid. And it could be low energy. It could be greasy skin. It could be weight gain. I mean, something is off. And that's why I will do the T4 by ED to confirm, but I have a hunch. But in a normal dog, when you just do a basic senior panel and it shows low thyroid, don't start jumping to thyroid supplement and don't let your veterinarian start doing it without insisting on a T4 by ED or a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. Because if the thyroid is low, but TSH is high, that means a stimulating hormone is working and trying to stimulate the glands to secrete. Then you might truly have hypothyroid. But if TSH is normal and the dog is acting fine, the only thing abnormal is a low T4, do an ED. All right. What else we have here? There were some other questions. Oh, is it true dog has urine effect? No, absolutely not. First of all, when it comes to urine problems, it's an issue. And female dogs are more prone than male dogs. And especially if there's a female puppy who has a little urinary tract infection, which is not common, but chances are, as most times when females get UTIs, it's an ascending urinary tract infection. It starts on the outside and creeps up the vaginal canal through the urethra into the bladder. It starts on the outside and goes on the inside. Does it ever really come from the kidneys? No. So, I mean, it's possible, but it's not your norm. So therefore, puppies, they're dirty. They're all over the place. It doesn't, if a puppy, a young dog gets a UTI, female, I'm not surprised. But it doesn't mean that any dog is prone to it if the dirt creeps up the vaginal canal. So I wouldn't say that it's usually a problem with that dog's immune system or a problem with that dog's anatomy. So I would not make that generalization. All right. Jonathan, hello. If a dog eats wet food, is their whole life, is that more damaging to their teeth? Well, I will tell you this, based on the discussion we just had, we said teeth cleaning true for cats too. Yes, Mac Toomey, along the same lines, it does have to do with cats as well. Good luck. However, as we know, it's very, very difficult to try and brushing a cat's teeth. You just got to get them used to it. As I said, go through the front, the start from the back, have them facing away from you, gently, massage, and get them used to the process little by little, and always give them a treat or food immediately right afterwards. Now, let's talk about canned versus dry food. First of all, let's talk about the market, all right? On the marketing, they tell you, your dog or pet should have dry food because the crunch, it'll break away the plaque, the tartar. Guess what? That's not the case. In fact, when we go again and decide what happens in the mouth, we go from the plaque, which is film left over from the teeth, to the bacteria in the saliva in the mouth working on that film, harden it, and it becomes tartar or calculus. Now, what happens? What did we just say? We said it's bacteria and saliva. Now, which teeth are used most often in a dog's mouth when they eat? The number one, the molars. Let's talk incisors. Incisors are for cutting. When was the last time a dog, domesticated pet, dog or cat, had to cut for their food? Bing, 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 bing. Never. Okay. How about the fangs? Canines, those are for tearing. Now, are we feeding our dogs raw animals where they have to, and tear them apart? No. So they're there. They use them, but not as efficiently and not as often. Therefore, when we look at an animal's mouth, we do see a little tartar building up on the canines as well. Where is most of the plaque building and then ultimately tartar building up in the molars and premolars and molars? The chewing teeth. So you give something like a hard food or soft food, and they chew any food, hard, soft, whatever, that is going to leave a film plaque on the teeth, that is going to ultimately lead to the tartar. So is it true that eating hard food literally breaks away and removes the plaque? And the answer is probably not. So I've seen dogs that only eat kibble and have terrible teeth. I've seen dogs that only eat canned and have terrible teeth. And then genetically, I see some dogs that I just saw a dog this week, 6 years old, never had a dentistry, and those teeth look amazing. I said, oh my God, you've just had these teeth cleaned? She goes, no. She goes, I brush them occasionally, but never, sometimes you get lucky. I had a first cousin of mine. We were almost identical. We were the same age. We were like, I think, 3 or 4 weeks apart as kids before we moved to California. We spent a lot of time together. I ate candy. Got tons of cavities. He never got a cavity. So, you know, some of it's just genes. Let's see. Does kidney and liver disease show up in a senior? Absolutely. Kidney and liver disease will show up. And it doesn't tell you always the type or what's going on, but it will show up. Now, I have a product that Eloise is called, it's the Clean Shine, Clean and Shine. So it is basically, a dental shine is like little pads, and you use it instead of a brush. Anything, Eloise, anything that will get to this plaque, the film, and remove it is going to help. Now, will you ever need a dentistry, a full veterinary dentistry, even if you use the wipes? Of course, yes. But the whole idea is to spread them out and less plaque buildup, because less plaque means less tartar and calculus, which means less pressure on the gums. We don't see the same gingival disease. Chill for cats, is it safe for them? Oh, on the short version, I'm going to say no, but I'm still waiting to hear back. That was from the manufacturer. I think they're being extremely cautious because it was made for and tested for dogs. So they're not willing to go out on the limb. But I sent the deck to a friend of mine who's a nutritionist, and I'm going to see what he thinks. And now, oh, I see, it's so cute. Some of you are talking to each other. That's great. I love that. All right. My male kitty has an itchy back. What can I do for him? So with this time of year, we do have a number of allergy seasons going on. It's an allergy season, a lot of feline allergies. So it all depends on what is the cause. Usually it's on the back. We used to say if it was a dog on the back, lower back, especially, I say fleas. But it doesn't, cats are different because cats get miliary dermatitis, which is their reaction to allergens, but there's no predicting the allergen based on the location on the body. In a dog, you have a clue. I mean, it's not foolproof. You have a clue on the belly, right? You're thinking, it's Adipi inhaled allergies. The face and feet and ears, it could be inhaled, but it also could be food. Dog, lower back, you're thinking, please. With a cat, it could be anything. So oftentimes, medicine will help. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the old corticosteroid, small amounts. And usually, once you start feeling these scabs, you have to say that there's probably secondary infection. So I also treat them with an antibiotic. If you treat just the allergy, but not the infection, they're still going to scratch. You're going to feel these scabs. You got to go both. And as far as the back near the tail, I would still check for fleas. It's possible that if the cat's turning around and biting the skin, causing an irritation, now it came into bacteria. So I would check for fleas as well. But we may need a little corticosteroid. I use Depomedrol, but antibiotics as well. Maybe bathing the cat if you can. If you're bathing your cat, make sure you have really good gloves because cats don't always love to be bathed. So Allergy Shot monthly during the summer works. I find it works 4 weeks. So happy. Yes. So if it's crazy, it's dogs, there is a great shot, which I like, called Cytopoint. You can also have the pill version called Apoquil. They are very effective. I use much less steroids in dogs, which is good because dogs don't tolerate the steroids as well as cats do. I use much less in dogs because of the Apoquil or the Cytopoint. I love them. All right. So can't bunk. If you're kind of chunky and you can't turn around and bite, I would still look for fleas, but think about biliary dermatitis, and it could be almost any cause. All right, that's all we have time for. Great audience today. Thank you so much. Any questions during the week, you can always reach me here at drjeff@petliferadio.com, or you can reach me, just send me an Instagram chat, a text. I will get back to you and give you my 2 cents. Sometimes that's all it's worth, maybe 2 cents. But anyway, you still get it for free. How's that? So think of all the money you save. Otherwise, we'll see you here next week. Oh, Mark, you're here next week? Okay. So Mark, our producer, I'm very jealous. He's going on a cruise this week. Oh, boy, I wish I could do that. Anyway, we'll be here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. Thank you again so much for joining me. And we will see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.